You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreeslein. Thanks so much for tuning in. Happy to have you with us for the next hour on this broadcast. We are going to talk turkey a little bit. We're also going to talk about bass fishing. Catch and release bass fishing season is now open. We'll talk to Brian Brosdahl about that a little bit. Mark Strand will be here to talk turkey. Mark joins us once a year, so looking forward to checking in with him. I'm going to kick things off with Mr. Tim Lesmeister. Tim, welcome. Good to see you. You're going to be back up in North Country here this time next week, it sounds like.
Absolutely. You know, the brown trout are moving out in front of my dock on Madeline Island. This is the time of year I can drop a Hobie kayak in the water and get the crankbaits out. I like to use the little flicker shads, red, bright red, and with gold back, and just cast up to the shoreline. And incredible fishing if you want to get into some big brown trout. And of course, I'm going to make a pit stop probably with my son on Lake Minnetonka, and then we're going to hit a little lake up by Mille Lacs. It's not Mille Lacs, it's near there, for some smallmouth bass too. So yeah, the fishing is good in the Midwest right now. If you're not out on the water, it's in the river. Boy, the river's just incredible right now. It's not on fire. It's boiling.
Tim, we've got a lot of headlines I want to get through with you. First off, we did have a story. Of course, last year, the legislature decided to get rid of the shotgun zone, but they told all the counties that they would be able to opt back into shotgun only if they wanted. I've seen a little bit of chatter on this on social media, what's going on, and I give Justin Runfeld, our staff writer, some credit. He ran down a story on this. And really, what was invaluable was we got River Valley Arms and Ammo down in Morton, Minnesota. They've got a gal down there who's been tracking this. They put together a really nice graphic for us that we printed in this week's paper. You can see the color version very well at OutdoorNews.com. I guess bottom line, Tim, there's still a few counties that have scheduled voting. It's not locked up yet. I don't know what, maybe five or six. But the majority of the counties have voted for the rifle option to stick with rifles, even if they're in southern Minnesota.
The vast majority, there's only a half a dozen or maybe a few more that are going to go shotgun, and they're all right on the border, most of those. And I think that's because most of those farmers that are right on the border probably are more Iowan than they are Minnesotan. So they just seem to have it in their genetics that they have to use shotguns for deer. There's something about Iowans that feel the need to use shotguns. I'm thinking that at some point they will probably realize that a lot of hunters are moving into the areas where they can use rifles because they'll be wanting to use something that's more accurate and gives them a little longer range, and so they'll see a lot of hunters that aren't in their area, which is going to cost them, you know, some money. The hotels, the gas stations, the sporting goods stores, they're going to notice a decline in hunters, and at some point they're going to make a change. That's my prediction.
Yeah, so as of this past Tuesday, the 14th, I count nine counties, Tim, that have voted for shotgun-only ordinance. One is fairly far north, Wilkin County. Well, that's way up by Otter Tail County. Pope County, also fairly far north. But then, yeah, you're right, the remaining seven, all pretty far south of the Minnesota River. We got, what, Brown, Cottonwood, Watchawan, Rock, Nobles, Faribault County, that is, and then Houston County, which Again, this gets back to my original gripe about allowing the counties to decide this. My dad's place where I hunt is right on the Winona-Houston County border. In fact, I have a stand that I hunt quite frequently, and it's on the fence line. The other side of that fence line is Houston County. The hunter over there will be restricted to shotgun only. I'm 10, 15 yards away potentially from him. I can use a rifle. I guess it worked out in my favor, but I still think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. They should not allow the counties to make that decision. They should just make it, you know, basically statewide. I don't have a problem with them actually restricting the rifles to straight wall cartridges, if you want to know the truth. I think if, you know, it's something that has to be sold to the, you know, people that are worried about going from a shotgun to a rifle, then maybe you do it incrementally. But it's done now. I mean, it's basically, hey, come on. If you want to use a rifle in these counties, more power to you.
We should know the remaining of these counties. There's, what, six of them left, I think, that have not voted by next week. Stearns, Candiohi, Nicolet, Jackson, Steele, and Dodge, all voting by the middle of next week. So we will update listeners to this broadcast and outdoor news readers on how that goes. But it's been a long time topic, and we've got a great graphic. Like I say, go to outdoornews.com if you want to check that out. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister are kicking off this week's broadcast. Tim, it was a pretty safe year out there for hunters in 2025. Eric Morgan had a nice story about that. We have had other years where you have, 13 or 14 incidents. You can go back not that long ago and probably find 13 or 14 fatalities, but really just one incident last year, one of the safest years on record in 2025, something for Minnesotans to be proud of.
The last time they actually only had one accident was 1982. So it's been a long time since we've been so lucky, because I think a lot of it is luck. I think some years it's just unlucky years, and you have some people that do dumb things. But I think that there's a lot of safety that's built into hunting these days. You know, the turkey hunters probably have it the worst, but they've gotten better too. I mean, it's just one of those things now where besides Blaze Orange and all of the things that we do, hunters are just safer now, and it shows up.
Another safety-related item, we had a story about a conservation officer airlifted out of the Whitewater Wildlife Management Area. Sound like working on removing an illegal permanent tree stand and fell, a 20-foot fall. They needed to airlift her out. Annette Schlag is her name. Sounds like she's recovering well. But nonetheless, there's a lot of issues going on there. You got to be so careful up in tree stands. That's one of the major ways, you know, a lot of people get hurt while hunting these days is falls from tree stands. You and I both know people who have fallen from tree stands. I had a high school friend who died a few years ago after a fall from a tree stand. You know, it's unfortunate this was a CO going and trying to fix something that someone was doing illegally. That person's illegal behavior resulted in this CO being injured. That's unacceptable on a lot of levels.
Yeah, it doesn't take much to, cut some 2x4s up, grab a handful of nails and go in and throw up an illegal stand on public land. People do it all the time. And, you know, they do these surveys of these public areas to try and find out where that happens. And then they go in and they tear these stands down. And I can see how somebody could, it's like just an on-the-job injury is what it is. And you're right. I've known people, my brother-in-law 2 years ago nearly killed himself about 20 feet that he fell from a tree, landed right on his back. Oof. And luckily he was in really good shape because he was in surgery for a long time and spent a number of days in the hospital, but he's pretty well recovered now. Here's the thing. He's up there with a strap on. He's got everything. He's doing everything right. But all of a sudden he steps on this branch, takes the strap off. He's getting ready to go down and boom, the branch breaks.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just that time in between when you took the strap off and you're ready to climb down the tree. It just happens. You don't think it's going to, and you've done everything you can to be safe, but for some reason, it just gets you anyway.
I've had three guys very close to me fall out of tree stands. One died, like I mentioned. Another guy broke his leg. The third guy almost died. Was very lucky that he didn't die. please be so careful with tree stands. And I'm glad most turkey hunters are out there using they're using portable blinds these days, staying on the ground. That's good. Finally, Tim, we've got it's that time of year. We got some black bears running around causing problems. Kind of a cute little story. A conservation officer had to help a elderly woman deter a nuisance black bear. Take your bird feeders down. I mean, that you just got to remind people that the bears are coming out earlier this year. Normally, you don't see them till May or June, but they're coming out earlier this year with this warm weather, and they're getting flooded out of some of their dens because of the snow melt. So just be bear aware, as they say.
Yeah, it's not just the snow melt. I think it's we're getting some rain instead of snow this
sure.
year.
Mm-hmm.
We're having these crazy warm-ups with the rain coming down. I'm seeing a lot of bear on the trail cam in my woods up on Malin Island, and the reason I think that the bears are out and about right now is it's just so wet. And I think they're getting up, they're getting out, and they're saying, you know, I don't want to lay in that soggy field of swamp, and I want to get out and I want to start moving around because it's warming up and it's wet. So I'd say if it would have been a not-so-wet year and the snow would have held on longer, those bears would still be in hibernation. But, man, they're everywhere right now. I'm seeing a lot of different sizes. Young bears, old bears, everybody says, oh, the young bears come out early, and they don't know any better than to climb up on your deck and knock your bird feeders down. No, the big ones are doing it too.
Tim, I'm going to talk with Mr. Strand and Mr. Brosdahl, but you'll stick around and help me close out this week's show again?
I certainly will.
Yeah, I got a couple fun topics I want to kick around with Mr. Lesmisher. So thanks, Tim. We'll catch up with you a little bit later. With that, we're going to grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Nonprofit MinFish's popular world's greatest online fishing auction is live this week, April 21 to the 26th. About 70 items are available. Brands like Humminbird and Daiwa, trips with legendary guides, vacation stays to top destinations, and much, much more. To bid, go to mn-fish.com and click on the auction tab. Auction proceeds support the nonprofit MinFish Foundation, the leading organization for Minnesota anglers.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory lengthened forcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20 gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports. Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken's Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Unleash the power of the Onyx Hunt app this turkey season and see how it'll become one of the best tools in your turkey vest. Use color-coded public and private land ownership information, tree species, and crop layers to scout from the comfort of your home. Then hit the field using compass mode, waypoints, and multiple base maps to help pin down more gobblers this spring. Use promo code ODN20 to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisano with you for another segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you like the discussions that we have here on the podcast and on the radio version of this program. If so, give us a call at 800-535-5191, and you can subscribe to Outdoor News and get the whole package. You can also do that at OutdoorNews.com. Turkey hunting season in Minnesota officially began this past Wednesday, April 15th. We've got seasons going all over the region. And a source that joins us every year to talk about turkey hunting, he's probably the most knowledgeable turkey hunter I know, is our old friend Mark Strand. He's checking in actually from out in Montana right now. And because of some surgery he's had, you're kind of on the sidelines this turkey hunting season, but you still got all that great information in your head, Mark. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Rob, I'm always happy to come on and love talking about turkey hunting. And this year, that's all I get to do is talk about it. So.
But let's talk about the folks who can get out there. The A season is going right now. Definitely, I think, still the most popular season. A lot of people love to get out early. They think that's when the turkeys are most rabid and ready to come to a call. I know from reading you over the years, you're a proponent of, hey, the entire season can be very productive.
100%. People do like to talk about, like, what do you think about early season strategies, mid-season strategies, late season strategies? And for me, it always comes down to the fact that, you know how we talk about microclimates within a given region where things can be quite different than what they are even 15 miles away. I want you to think, when it comes to turkey hunting, I want you to think about micro environments and what's going on in that area. And what I mean by that is the spot that you are going to hunt, what is happening in that spot? Are there 30 shed hunters and morel mushroom club of the month out there walking around and people's dogs and everything going through the area that you want to hunt? Are there other people hunting there? And if so, are they kind of clumsy hunters? Do they whoop and holler when they pull the trigger and shoot a turkey, even though there's two other toms right there watching them high-five each other, scream and jump up and down and run out to the bird, and they get scattered to the winds? What is happening in the area that you're going to hunt is more important than whether it's April 15th, May 10th. It really doesn't matter, but it does matter how much pressure those turkeys absorb before you get out there and hunt.
And presumably too much pressure is a bad thing. That's what you're driving at here, right, Mark?
Because it causes the turkeys to get quieter than they otherwise would be. They might not gobble as much as they otherwise would.
Mark, you've been turkey hunting a long time. Do you think the birds here in Minnesota vocalize less than maybe they did 20 years ago or 25 years ago?
Yes, I think that certain dynamics can play a big part in that. And I know that in the Missouri Ozarks, for example, there was a time when there weren't as many turkeys. And so there weren't groups of hens, for example, that a gobbler could be associated with and kind of gather up as his harem. And so it would be more common in those days for a gobbler to walk long stretches of a ridge maybe and gobble fairly often because he had to do that in order to search and find a hen. And so one of the dynamics that drives how much they gobble is whether they're in the direct proximity of hens. And so if you have a given tom and he's got six hens right there with him, he doesn't have to gobble at all if he doesn't want to at that point. You know, so those kinds of things drive how much the turkeys gobble more than like trends over time, I think.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisano, we're chatting with Mark Strand about turkey hunting here in Minnesota and beyond. The turkey hunting season officially kicked off in our state this past Wednesday. Mark, a lot has changed with turkey hunting and turkey hunting management and licensing protocol just in the past 15 or 20 years. Anybody listening right now who gets inspired by this conversation can go out and buy a turkey hunting tag over the counter now. That said, there might be some folks listening and say, I don't have a clue how to call. What would you tell that person Are there little tricks? Are there some simple things they can do? Can they buy a call and still give it a shot?
Absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't take all that much equipment. You know, here's what I would say with respect to that. Be aware of, there are three primary, there are other types of calls, but there's three primary calls. Let's call them box calls. And then we'll call them pot and peg calls, also kind of generically known as a slate call. And then the mouth call. The mouth call is the hardest one to master. If you're just getting started, get a good quality wooden box call. You know, go to the store and see what they have and try them a little bit. Or get a good wooden cased slate call. It's easier than ever because you can go on YouTube or you can listen to recordings of actual real wild turkeys calling. And when it comes to turkey hunting, the primary calls that you need to learn that are put out by both gobblers and hens is yelping and cutting. So if you can learn to yelp, which is just, you know, that kind of a sound. And then if you can learn to do cutting, it was pop, 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 which is a real sharp, each note ends distinctly and there's kind of a slight silence before the next one starts. If you can learn to do yelping and cutting, now here's the real key. The rhythm has to be exactly turkey rhythm. You can make the sound properly, but if the rhythm is not correct, the turkeys will not recognize it as a turkey sound. That's why it's so important. Buy a good quality call. Let's say it's a slate call. And listen to recordings of real turkey hens yelping and cutting and practice that. Yelping, you tip the striker away from you a little bit and you make an elliptical shape on the call without raising the striker off the slate. Cutting, you tip the striker more straight up and down, perhaps press down just a little bit harder, and you pop it toward yourself as though you're striking a match toward yourself and pop, 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 pop. Now, here's what else to know. The closer to the edge of the slate call that you are, the higher pitched the sound is going to be. The closer to the center of the slate call, the lower pitched the call is going to be. The same turkey, as it gets more excited, will become higher pitched. That's why you might start out more toward the center, like yelping and cutting on the call, and then almost get squeaky with it, you might say. Work your striker toward the outer edges of the call as you try to get that turkey that you're talking to excited. If you can learn to do that, you can call turkeys better than 80% of all the hunters, including seasoned hunters out there. I want to tell a quick story about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I was mentoring up near Brainerd, Minnesota with the backcountry hunters and anglers, and I was assigned two women. They were on their first hunt ever. They had never hunted anything. They had never called anything. And I gave them both a box call, one the slate call, and then we switched back and forth. And we practiced for during the hunt on the whole first day and into the evening on the end of the first day. On the second morning, the two of them tag team called a tom. They were yelping and cutting, and they sounded like somebody who had won a turkey calling contest.
That's awesome.
In their past life. And they pulled this bird right up to within like 22 yards, I think. And one of the girls shot that bird. And I have never seen, it was an example of what you can do as a beginner if you just know how to practice calling.
Excellent little anecdote there. We're almost out of time, Mark. One other quick rule of turkey hunting, don't move, right? If you want to get a bird, you don't want to get busted. If you don't want to get busted, don't move.
That's why, you know, the turkey hunting blinds that we have nowadays, and there's lightweight versions that you can carry with you as you go. Yes. If you're inside of a blind, you can get away with a lot more movement. If you're not inside of a blind, exactly what you said. If you think you can get away with any movement, you're wrong, because turkeys, we like to say, they have no curiosity. They couldn't care less about what you might be, and they don't do what whitetails do, where they run away a couple steps and then stop and look back at you. As they say down south, they're fixing to get a new address if they see something they don't like.
Hey, one last quick thought. Are you seeing some of these videos I'm seeing some of these young guys doing where they're hiding behind a turkey fan to draw in birds, then they're shooting them really close? I see a lot of people critical of that from a safety standpoint. I don't like it. I don't think it's real ethical. I'm just curious if it's something you've bumped into or you've seen.
Yeah, I've watched people do it. I've seen people doing it on the Wyoming side of the Black Hills. One time I watched a guy do it across a pasture, and it's unbelievable how well it works. It's called reaping, but I'm not in love with it for the same reasons that you just described. You know, if you're hoping to get shot, I can't think of a better way to do it to get shot. I don't want to be overly critical of, you know, if you're absolutely 100% certain that you're the only people on this property, but I don't know how you can be certain of that. I don't think people are going to stop doing it. They sell stuff now for doing it. But yeah, I have pretty big reservations about that too.
Well, Mark, thanks a lot for spending some time with me. If folks want to read what you're all about, is your Patreon the best place to see some of your writing as well as in Outdoor News?
Well, you can see the stuff on my Patreon. You know, as you know, about 5 years ago, I retired for the most part, and I haven't been writing any new ones on the Patreon for a long time. You can go in there. There's quite a library of them on there. But for right now, especially when it comes to turkey hunting and stuff, thanks to you, you invited me to write for the Outdoor News. I've had some stuff in there this spring. And yeah, I would just invite people to pay attention and read the Outdoor News, not just for the turkey hunting stuff, but for all the other great issues related reporting that you do and all the other good how-to stuff. Just to be able to enjoy the outdoors in Minnesota, it's hard to beat.
Well, Mark, thanks a lot for spending time with me. I hope you continue to improve health-wise and you get out and at least do some calling yet this spring.
Yeah, thank you very much. Hey, it's always fun. Thanks, Rob.
That was our buddy Mark Strand. Appreciate him joining us. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
You fish the same waters year after year, but what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Nonprofit MinFish's popular world's greatest online fishing auction is live this week, April 21 to the 26th. About 70 items are available. Brands like Humminbird and Daiwa, trips with legendary guides, vacation stays to top destinations, and much, much more. To bid, go to mn-fish.com and click on the auction tab. Auction proceeds support the nonprofit MinFish Foundation, the leading organization for Minnesota anglers.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline with you for another segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you like the chatter here. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 if you would like to subscribe to our print or digital versions. We are in a transition season here, believe it or not. There's still some ice fishing this weekend in the Arrowhead, northeastern Minnesota, some of the border country up there. But of course, ice out has occurred in most of the state. And that means this bass fishing season is rolling, this catch-and-release bass fishing season. I thought we'd check in with our buddy Brian Bro Brosdahl. He hasn't been with us in a year. Brian, an avid, hardcore professional fisherman, of course, a fishing guide from north-central Minnesota. I thought we'd recap the ice season with him and talk about what's going on with some of the open water activity already. Brian, hey, thanks for joining me. It's good to see you. Coming off a pretty good ice fishing season?
Absolutely, Rob. It was one of those years where you could take a truck about everywhere. And I noticed there's a little bit of ice gets a little bit of pressure. And then when you could drive a truck, it gets a lot of pressure. And so everybody got out and they had fun.
What were the high points of the hard water season for you? Was it, perch on Lake Mille Lacs? Was it walleyes in some of the our other lakes? What was really working this winter?
Well, I always catch perch, but walleyes, it's real interesting. There's quite a crop coming up. All those little, people call them dinks, but all those 13s, 12s and all that, they grew up and we're starting to see a lot of 15s and quite a few up to 17 on Winnie. Last winter, they were doing a lot of swim bys, or we call them drive bys. They come up and look and leave. This year, you drop it down and they eat it. It's good. Like, yeah. And so I'm excited for open water season as a guide. I have the ultimate confidence, and I know there's still a ton of small perch in the system, and that's the only thing that hurts us. Nothing shuts down a lake like micro perch everywhere, because if walleyes love them, they just gorge on them.
Well, and it's a sign of a healthy lake, right? I mean, it's a good thing when you see that, but it doesn't necessarily make you feel better when the fish aren't biting. Yeah, when they've got all that natural forage. Brian, of course, is just north of Lake Winnebogoches in Max, Minnesota. So he's able to fish some of the best fishing water, really, in the lower 48, I would argue. Now, the Rainy River just closed down on Tuesday, the 14th. That's a catch and release walleye season. How did that go up there? People usually get a lot of great photo fish. Talking to you off air, maybe a little slower this year. I saw some other reports too suggesting maybe the rainy wasn't quite as good this year.
Well, you know, people tell me numbers, but like I said, they always end in even numbers. Like we got 80, we got 70 the other day, and it's like sometimes I catch like 23, or sometimes I catch 47. I never end on an even number, but I'm glad I brought bait. Honestly, I had some frozen minnows. I had them in the plastics last year. You didn't need anything else, but we got hits on plastics. We slid the current and pitched towards shore, and our fish were 15 feet or more primarily. So I think that boiling deep center sand was holding the fish this year. And ironically, we had cold front a few days before the end of the season, and it really changed things. It slowed it down. Everybody's catching fish. Plastics seems to be the deal lately, but this year at the end, we took the plastics and set them down and started slowly slipping the current. You could barely see us go backwards. We were just going really slow and trying to keep that thing within a foot of the bottom and sharp hops, but the frozen minnows were the trick. I was watching in the crowd because there's people. This was a really busy end of the season up there, more than I've seen in a long time, and which is great. It was a very peaceful, very happy group of people. And sometimes there's a little bit too much like energy drinks in them and stuff.
Yeah, when they're trying to park and get back to the landing and all that good stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And there's good Samaritans for hire that'll drive you back to the landing. But anyway, long and short of it, it turned out to be a bait deal towards the end. And I'll tell you, it's good to have good bait, but I had really good dead bait. And the fish showed us that they liked it.
Brian, you saw some sturgeon get caught. The sturgeon, that's what a tremendous fishery that's turned into up there, too.
It's absolutely incredible what we have here. That has turned into an incredible fishery, and we've watched them grow. There's a lot of 60s now.
Wow.
I remember when a 50 was a big deal.
Uh-huh.
Now 50s, they're just like that's just in between bites. You know what I mean? It's not, you kind of get those as to warm up and horse efficient, but you're getting these 60s and 70s. And so we're starting to see fish in the 70s, like closer to 80. So,
wow.
I mean, how many records are going to pop up in the next couple of years? And
that's very exciting. Yeah. You listen to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Jerison. We're talking with Brian Brosdahl, guide out of North Central Minnesota. Check out his website, brosguideservice.com, if you want to get in touch with Brian. Hey, Brian, let's talk a little bit about this bass thing. This is the first spring that we have had catch-and-release bass fishing statewide forever. The bass season closed at the end of February with the walleye and pike, and you couldn't officially fish bass, target bass, until, late May. But now you can go out and catch and release bass as we speak. I'm sensing that there's guys out there taking advantage of it and enjoying this fishery. Have you been out yet doing it? Do you intend to get out soon? What's the vibe from you?
I'm so excited about it. I don't need to fish for food every day. I like action. And there's some incredible bass fisheries up here. You know, all of them, all the big waters up here have bass. And what I like about it right now, they're schooled up. And they bite. When you go crappie fishing, whether you're on a leech or Mille Lacs or wherever you're crappie fishing, the bass are in there, and they're just, it's just a zoo. You know, it's literally a zoo. They're just like pigs in a pen running around. And it's a finesse thing because it's cold water. So you can throw little grubs. So just a simple grub tail.
Mm-hmm, a little plastic,
Jig worms have always been my favorite since forever. You just break the top off of a worm, save them because now, you know, because of Ned Kitey, now it's a Ned rig. He saved them all and used the other part, but Ned rigs too. When I do the bass term up at the border, you see all these Ned rigs hanging out, and I'm like, I got one too. It just doesn't feel right. It's non-scientific. It just looks like a cigar butt.
Big contraption, yeah.
I'm throwing it, I'm looking in the water, and I'm like, am I being duped here? You know, you look at it coming through the water, and the fish eat it. So bass is great. They're schooled up. The big ones, all these bass colonies throughout the weed bed are all jammed in the areas. Why wouldn't you want to catch fish nonstop on light tackle? Small hair jigs are fun too. And you don't have to have something that says bass on it. You throw something wiggly and grubby and you catch fish and enjoy it. I mean, there's not a lot for them to hide in. Wild rice, standing stalks of cabbage, steep breaks, near shore, boat harbors. Any kind of log or stick in 2 feet of water to 4, 5, 6 feet of water, it has bass bite right now and late ice. Incredible.
Brian, any difference in tactics between smallmouth and largemouth, or they all?
Smallmouth, all crayfish oriented, and some of those border waters, they have smelt in them. So you're imitating that. And I like a little spinner on everything if I can underneath, because that's where they're chasing. They're underneath and they're chasing. So I always loved underspins. A small what we call bass spinners with a skirted spinner, single or tandem, slow rolling. Remember, they're cold, but they're super aggressive. The old purple jigworm everywhere on the planet will catch fish. 16th ounce gets you less snags, let it slow fall. And if you get them, you're going to keep getting them that spot. So you get a little lull, but keep casting same areas because they're going to produce fish, and they're swimming through in waves. And get ready to have some high numbers, jumping big fish. Thank you, Minnesota DNR. You just made some people really happy here, and I really love it.
Yeah, just remember to release those fish quickly, get them back in the water. It's cold water. They should recover quickly. They're bass. They're tough. We don't want people to abuse the season or abuse the fish, but go out and have fun so that the bass resource remains healthy. Brian, we're about out of time here, but we got a May 9th fishing opener coming up in just a few weeks. You optimistic for walleye fishing this spring?
It's going to be fantastic. Some of the big waters, it's going to be a bunch of big fish returning from the spawn. Some areas might get marked off. I think it's going to be incredible this year. I was surprised how many walleyes we caught through the ice, and they actually ate. So we might have a year where you just catch them. And, of course, Red Lake is like a stock pond. Winnie is like a stock pond. this is probably some of the best walleye fishing I have ever seen. In the old days, everything got kept. Now there's so many fish in the lakes. It's incredible. And so I see a good opener, and it all depends. We got to get the ice off so we can warm the water up. We need rain. Waters are low. If you got a big boat, you're not going to get in everywhere. But if you got a smaller boat, maybe bring that on some of the smaller lakes, because we're really low, two and a half feet. So remember that.
Southern Minnesota's got a fair amount of water right now. We've had rain down here, but let's hope northern Minnesota sees some rain events between now and opener. Brian, thanks a lot, man. You're so upbeat, and we appreciate you joining us here once a year to give us a recap of how some of your seasons have gone. Good luck on the regular opener, and I encourage folks to reach out to Brian. It's brosguideservice.com. Good luck the remainder of the spring, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Rob. Everybody, be safe out there. Have a lot of fun.
Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Kins is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory lengthened forcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20 gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Your land is your legacy. But keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Final segment of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. If you like the content here, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com, or you can give us a call at 800-535-5191. Subscribe to print or digital versions. Tim Lesmeister here to help me wrap up this week's broadcast. Tim, a couple non-Minnesota stories, some fun stories, pop culture stories you and I like to broach now and then. First of all, kind of a sad one. This Jim Whittaker passed away. First American to summit Mount Everest. Hard to believe that guy is still alive. He was, what, 97 years old?
He must have been in excellent shape. I mean, just to think about going up to the top of Mount Everest. Of course, this was in 1963. When Whittaker went up, I'm sure he had a lot less quality gear. I'm sure he was using stuff that was marginal at best compared to what they've got today.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, those guys were tough. but it's come down to, you know, who's got the money. If you've got money, you can figure out a way to get up there, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's who's got the money. And, you know, a lot of people now, what they do is they vacation at base camp. They go hang out at base camp and they think that's pretty cool. And then that's all they do is just, you know, that's their thing. You know, the problem with people is that no matter how much they try to be environmentally sound and make sure they leave things in a pristine condition, it can't be done. When they leave, there's just a lot of junk and mud and the latrines are full. And I mean, it's right.
Oxygen tanks everywhere.
Everywhere. They don't bring their oxygen tanks.
That's terrible.
Back down.
That's terrible.
I don't know. At some point, they should need to put a moratorium on Mount Everest and just let the thing settle out for about 25 years.
Well, yeah, clean it up. I don't know. You know, where the money, who's in charge of it? Is that Nepal? You know, they probably love all the tourism that comes into, you know, that region for it. But anyway, we're here to honor Jim Whitaker. Remarkable life. He worked at REI. He ran REI for a number of years during its initial big expansion. So quite an American life. We got one in South America here. This involves invasive species. I think you and I have talked about this once before, Tim, but our old buddy Pablo Escobar, the big drug kingpin down in Colombia, what he imported 4 hippos from Africa for his own little private zoo 35 years ago. And of course, he's no longer with us. And then the hippos got loose. And now they're an invasive species in Colombia. There's a couple hundred of them running around causing problems. They're beating up on the river manatees. Lord knows what else. And there's a plan to try to cull them. And the animal rights people are yelling and screaming about this.
I would not cull these hippopotamus. I would actually wipe them out completely. I don't think that this invasive species, which was never there before Pablo brought those 4 hippos in the 1980s, it's pure stupidity that he brought in a male and a female. He should have brought in all females or all males.
I don't think he was the most ethical guy in the world, Tim. I think Pablo just did whatever he wanted, right?
What an idiot. Anyway, the thing about it is that these are an invasive species. And I don't care what the animal rights people say. You know, I would find out if there's some good recipes for hippopotamus. I would donate all the meat to the food shelf, and I would get rid of all of them. Because that's what, you know, you say, oh, the poor hippopotamus. What about the other creatures that they're destroying?
Exactly.
Like you said, the manatee is one, the fish. They're actually having some real negative interaction with the people that live there.
Oh, yeah. Hippos hate people. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't get near a hippopotamus. They'll kill you just for fun. So to me, it's like, why would you even allow these animals to exist in this location? They need to be completely extirpated.
It's the same old question we talk about with feral horses. We talk about, you know, all sorts of, you know, kind of charismatic megafauna when it becomes an exotic species somewhere. To me, it just seems so black and white. Just shoot them. Just get rid of them and move on. There's no shortage of hippos in Africa. You know, there are threatened species in Africa. Hippos aren't one of them. I think they're doing pretty well. If you want to spend the money to capture them and take them somewhere else, I wouldn't be opposed to that. But probably by the time you collect half of them, they breed pretty fast. The population is just going to be back to where it was. It sounds like, what, Tim, some hippopotamus tourism has erupted around it. So then you got people lobbying against it. They're going to impact my business because I got people that want to come and look at the hippos. It's just, this is what exotic species do.
I don't call them exotic species. I call them invasive species.
Yeah, that's true. That's accurate, yeah.
I think what they are is they're actually a bane on the country that they have been brought into. In this particular case, they're just doing too much damage to the resources that they were brought into, and they need to be wiped out completely.
It seems like we circle back on this topic every few years, and it's, you know, proportionately worse because they're just letting the problem fester. Yeah. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreisein and his buddy Tim Lesmeister are winding on this week's broadcast. And finally, Tim, one last topic. A couple times a year, you and I talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I believe back in January or February, we talked about the list of nominees. We had some fun with that. Well, now we have the final list. We see who's being inducted. For the most part, Tim, of the folks that they nominated, they kind of went with the ones that you and I liked, with a couple of exceptions. But Phil Collins and Oasis at the top of the list. I think you definitely like Phil Collins, and I definitely am glad to see Oasis getting in.
I think Billy Idol was a good choice, too.
Yeah.
He was on the top of the list. And Graham Parsons, I was a little surprised. He was kind of a country rocker. So I guess rock is kind of in his genre just a little bit. But, you know, there's always those individuals that you go, I just can't believe they weren't already in. Ed Sullivan, why wasn't he put into the Rock Hall of Fame from day one? I mean, this guy did more for rock and roll than anybody on the planet. We're talking Ed Sullivan, and he just got put in this year? This is crazy. And Rick Rubin. I mean, hey, Rick Rubin has produced some incredible rock and incredible hip-hop.
He's probably very responsible for the Avett Brothers going mainstream and becoming as popular as they are. But among the acts, Tim, that got in, any that really, if any, I see you and I argued a little bit about Iron Maiden. They got in. Joy Division / New Order. I'm very glad to see that they got in. Sade, I am still shocked that she was even nominated. I saw John Bream at the Star Tribune say that he thought she deserved to be in, and she got in. You and I talked, there's a bunch of acts like Mariah Carey that they're pop, right? They're not rock and roll, but Mariah Carey should get in before Sade, right?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And you know, what's interesting is that we're seeing a younger voting group that because we're seeing so many hip hop artists now. You know, it's amazing. Queen Latifah's going in now here, so
yeah,
that tells you something, right?
Right, under the Early Influence Award or something like that. So they're they weren't some of the acts I think that you and I were debating. You know, the one that did not get in that I'm still a little surprised is the Black Crowes. Do some of the folks in the music industry just think the Black Crowes were too much of a ripoff of a lot of other Southern and classic rock bands like the Rolling Stones? You could say that about a lot of other bands that are in. You look at Green Day. I mean, Green Day is nothing more than punk rock revisited. I like Green Day. I think they deserve to be in, but it seems odd to me that the Crows aren't in.
I agree with you there, but that's why I say I think we're seeing, you're seeing a very big group of younger voters now mixed in with the old guys, too, because like I said, you're seeing guys like Ed Sullivan, Rick Rubin, and Graham Parsons and these guys. But I say to myself when I look at this that there's a lot of people going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that aren't even close to being in a rock and roll genre.
A lot of people in the States don't like Oasis and were mad. And I'm seeing social media chatter. They don't like them getting in. You know, that band sold out, about 30 concerts in like 35 minutes. In 2025, they had people on both sides of the Atlantic crying their eyes out. They were the biggest band on the planet in 2025.
Oh, yeah. So I think that, you know, you get these people that don't like the success that some bands have had, and so they figure out a way to hate them. And I don't know why certain bands bring that on. Maybe it's just the fact that, you know, they're arrogant, but so what? I mean, they seem to have really good ability to write some pretty catchy grabbable tunes and
big choruses. Yeah.
Phenomenal stuff.
And your buddy Phil Collins did get in. You and I debated him a little bit. You're glad to see him get in.
I love Phil Collins. I thought he was an exceptional writer and his songs were about as rock as you can get. I mean, this is a guy that's pioneered rock from day one.
Well, Genesis was already in.
Yeah. Genesis was already in, but you know, Collins had a phenomenal solo career as well.
All right. Well, Tim, thanks for another segment. I appreciate the listeners putting up with us as we argue about the music. Oh, about once a quarter, I guess we do that, don't we? But that's all right. We like to mix it up here a little bit.
I just hope someday I can go to South America and have a hippo burger.
All right. With that, we are going to close out it. Tim, thanks a lot. Have a good week, buddy. Safe travels.
See you later.
Tim Lesmeister. Thank you to him, all of our other guests. I hope everybody has a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.